Welcome to the Talking Fit Podcast, a show dedicated to helping all of you become the strongest version of yourselves in and out of the gym. We hope that today's show can help bring you one step closer to your goals with the education brought to you by our guests, crew, and community. Please don't forget to leave us a 5-star review and rating wherever you find your podcasts and share the show with your friends and family. Remember that greatness comes from small beginnings. So without further ado, here we go. Welcome back, Greg. You've been so incredibly busy working for your Fitfluencer, going here, there, and everywhere. How are things?
Very good. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad, mate. I have to say, not too bad. How is everything with work, your neck of the woods, changing lives?
It's just what I do.
Well, you are a very big deal now. Absolutely.
I am.
So, we've got limited time because I know you are just such a busy individual. And this is kind of my only big thing for the day. So let's get straight into it. So I had a really interesting conversation that's kind of led to this sort of like discussion piece where I had a client basically say, look, you guys talk about stress the whole time. You talk about why it's so important. We know the mechanisms, you know, that are resultant from having stress, and we know the causes. But what actually is stress as a definition? Like, how do we, you know, define stress? So that's why I thought we should get into a conversation about actually trying to get people to understand what the hell is allostatic load? What is that cumulative stress effect? How do we define it? And what actually is the difference between eustress, beneficial stress, and distress, negative stress, and the impact that has on the body? So kick us off, Greggy.
Well, we'll probably start, like you said, with definitions of what both the things are. So if we look at like stress in of itself, nothing really is differential to the body. So any sort of stress, whether that be training, whether that be lack of sleep, whether that be the food you eat, whether that be, you know, the person cutting you off in traffic, stress is stress. For the most part. Now, when we look at like the difference between eustress and de-stress, when we look at eustress, it's the ability for the body to be able to respond to said stress and become better or recover and become stronger. And when we kind of tip that, and we can always think of it like a bell curve, there's always an inevitable amount of stress that accumulates, and eventually it flips from what you'd call eustress into de-stress. And one of like the real interesting things that you see now, well, especially in terms of research, because I know it's so big in our space now, like longevity. But when we look at longevity, so if you look at what like actual geroscience is, so like the study of what makes us age, one of the real key components of aging is the loss of stress resilience. So when people say, I used to be able to do this work and I wouldn't fall apart, that's a sign that we're no longer able to deal with the same stress. So we've lost internal or psychological stress resiliency. So there are just a few different things to consider before I start babbling on for 10, 15 minutes about it. But it's important to remember, eustress is what we're able to or capable of recovering from or getting stronger from. And then de-stress is just that accumulative effect of too much that inevitably makes us think about it all encompassing, weaker, not just physically, but in all different aspects.
Yeah. And I think this is a point that I sort of want to sort of focus on when we talk about sort of stress resilience, because I think the thing that people don't really sort of understand is that your body is actually designed to deal with stress as part of its like systemic feedback loop. So in terms of, we're meant to go through periods of calorie deficit, we're meant to go through periods of temperature change, we are meant to go through periods of psychological stress, we are meant to go through periods of physiological distress. These are all normal parts of the human experience and actually are part of the feedback loop that leads to adaptation. And this is one of the things that we talk about with people on the PT course, is the fact that one of the unspoken points of progressive overload is that you are building not just physical but also nervous system based resilience to ever increasing demands and load. Now, when we think of that in terms of exposure to stress, because we live lives that are so incredibly overstimulated, we're constantly being tapped out with this sort of consistent low level of stress. It's almost like white noise continuously. Like I almost think it's relatively similar to like having tinnitus, where you just have that constant stimulation going on the whole time. It may not be overly painful, but it's something that is constantly tapping at your overall bandwidth. This is where we start to see that we're actually getting individuals that are getting increasingly depressed, increasingly anxious, increasingly negatively adapted to the stress that they experience, because it's not the fact that they're going through such high peaks. It's the fact that they're never experiencing a true valley where they're going through periods of lower stress because they're constantly in that overstimulated space.
I think that's a good point. And sometimes if we look at it on a societal level, we are becoming much more prone, we'll say, to insult. So everyone is much quicker to be insulted. And this could be a societal thing. I always look at it through a physiological lens when I see this kind of thing, because I don't like politics, doesn't interest me too much. I try and avoid it as much as possible. But when we look at the rampant depression and anxiety that's occurring in our society in regards to whatever it may be, so like issues that are generationally would not have given us that same stress, people were able to cope more previously, and it just puts, it gives me a little bit of a light bulb moment when I think about people and how this, like you spoke about, low grade accumulative stress that just occurs all the time. I always think of like inflammation, like a smoldering fire, never really recognized, but it's slowly burning away at the castle until eventually it collapses. And that tends to be, like, as a man, you probably understand as well, who's had his challenges at certain stage in his life. It's not that anything specifically changed in those processes. It's just that inevitably the smoldering just eventually led to full collapse of what was going on.
Yeah, no, completely. And I think one of the things is that when we look at that overarching concept of stress is stress is stress, regardless of, you know, whether it's, as you say, people, someone cutting you off on track, cutting you off in traffic, your partner eating the last of your favorite hummus, or you getting in a knife fight, they're all kind of physiologically the same thing. They vary by degree, not by kind. I think one of the big things that I remember you speaking to one of your clients about, and I overheard this, I thought, oh God, that's a really good analogy. I'm going to claim this and say it was mine all along. Was that essentially
never made one up.
This is the thing, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, but also there's nothing new under the sun. Like, I don't know who said it, but it's was it imitators imitate but artists steal. But yeah, so you were saying to one of your clients that ultimately we all wake up with an empty bucket, and every single stressful experience we have goes into that bucket. Now we have one of two options. Either we can try and reduce the amount of stress going into that bucket, or we can increase the overall size of that bucket. That ultimately is stress resilience. So one of the ways that we can, I think, progressively start talking about this, because I think it's very easy, especially in this space, as you said, when everyone's talking about longevity and everyone's trying to be the next fucking Ben Greenfield, and they're trying to, you know, live to 100 by boofing supplements up their bumhole and ice baths and tweaking their nipples with sage or whatever it is. Everyone's trying to do everything to live longer, healthier lives. But what we're not doing is getting away from this really niche nuanced thing and focusing on the basics. When we look at physical fitness, look at physical training, cardiovascular fitness, cardiovascular training, all these different facets of physical self-expression, self-progression, they all ultimately are the mechanisms by which we increase the overall ability to handle stress. Because the stress of, you know, you going through a normal day of work and then having to bolt on, going to the gym, getting your heavy barbell squats in, going through the additional mental stress of, right, now I need to make sure that I go through the recovery mechanisms that I need to, which include down regulation, which for some people is actually a direct stressor, because the idea of stopping is very anxiety inducing to them. Like, we have this the whole time when we're dealing with, and this is going to be a massively broad generalization, but we have this all the time when we get typically women coming into the gym and we say to them, okay, you need to take 2 to 3 minutes of rest between sets. And they go, what? And they look at you and they get a bit stressed out about the fact you're making them stand still, or at least, you know, in the case of some people, they go for a little mini walk and come back. But you're making them take an actual enforced rest period. You're making them take that down regulation time, because they don't have the ability to understand that you don't have to be at this, and you shouldn't be at this constantly elevated sympathetic state the whole time. There has to be that ebb and flow. And that ultimately translates out to every other facet of their lives.
And so, I agree. So like even in the psychological side of things, when it comes to strength training, so I'm thinking about like, there's obviously physiological stress resiliency, so the body's ability to be able to cope with stress, but there's a psychological side to that as well. And I think that it's one of the things that training just instills in people, that normal life can't, well, it can in certain circumstances, but not day to day, not week to week. And it's something that like, when I train people in person or when I train people online, when you watch videos or when you're training someone in person, and we used to do in the gym where we used to trick people, we go, take a weight you think you can do for 10, they can do 20, right? Being able to accumulate stress and push through repetitions creates psychological resiliency that people tend to lack now. Not now necessarily, but just in general. We are looking for the comfort when realistically sometimes psychological stress can be something to prove to you that you can do more, and not necessarily that more is always better, but it's definitely something that people need to take into consideration when they think about stress. It's not that obviously training does accumulate stress, but sometimes actually completing task can be so rewarding that it can downregulate later, is kind of what I was trying to get at there.
Yeah, and I think ultimately that's that sort of like dopamine driven like task completion loop. Right, because when you do go through periods of upregulated dopamine, you're naturally going to have a downregulated nervous system in the post task completion act. So I think like one of the big things to sort of really pick apart there is the, obviously we've just spoke about the physiological side of things, but I think it's one of those things where, you know, you're neither a body with a mind, nor are you a mind with a body. It's very much they exist synergistically with each other. And you know, I always used to catch a lot of flack for talking about the whole like, it's not just about squats, it's about life. Deadlifts are a mechanism to improve yourself and all that shit. But even if we get away from sort of the crunchy granola wokery of it, I think it's very, very important that people understand that it's not necessarily just the gym. It's any task that creates internal challenge, because when you create internal challenge to the system, you provide an adaptive stress. And I think that's one of the big things. This isn't sort of, you know, this isn't sort of putting yourself in thousands of pounds of credit card debt just to see if you can deal with financial stress. It's a case of,
you're not punching yourself in the face because it causes trauma. Like, it's not the same thing.
I guarantee you that there is some David Goggins watching, Andrew Tate loving, Alpha Sigma nut job, just punching himself in the dick repeatedly going, I'm harder than you. You can't break me, son. You don't know me. But yeah, so that the weirdos of the internet aside, I think one of the big things to sort of focus on there is the fact that psychological stress is directly linked to a physiological outcome, but physiological stress will always equal as well, not just physiological, but also a psychological outcome. And I think that is definitely one of the things that people are lacking, is that understanding that life is not meant to be easy. Training is not meant to be easy. We do go through these periods where you just go, man, I'm going through a really shit period right now, whether that's in life, whether that's in training. You know, in a really good training program, you should have 1 week out of that training cycle where you are just dragging ass, because you're progressively overloading before a deload. You're overreaching. You're getting to the point where you're going just as much as you can tolerate. And then you get to back off. You get the luxury of being able to go, yeah, okay, I completed that next phase. And that bleeds over into psychology.
I know, 100% agree with that. So like, I think in society, and I've been responsible for it many times in my life, we ease towards comfort. I can't remember who said it, and it was quite apt. It's like, it's the only time in history where we can go out and fail at everything, whatever the goal in the day is, and come back and sit in front of Netflix and eat ice cream. Whereas if you go back 10 years ago, if you failed in the hunt, you had to go do it again. So we don't have that same pressure to go and repeat the effort, even though we failed. So inevitable failure, it just almost compounds itself. And I think the gym and the stress of the gym teaches us that we can go much further than we possibly think we can. Like, there's always, I always say to people, like, lean into the suck. You don't have to do it on everything, but like not on a back squat. Like I don't want you to do two forced reps on a back squat. But like yes. if you're on a leg extension, if you're doing a bicep curl, if you're doing something like that, you have way more in you than you consider that you do. And sometimes leaning into the suck is a really, really important part of it.
Yeah. And I think a big part of that also, and I talk about this the whole time when I speak to a client and I say like, okay, cool. How many reps in reserve do you have? Because people have this really, really messed up understanding of what like two reps in reserve actually looks like, right? Like if I finish a set and they go, God, that was a lot. And they go, yeah, but I think I had like four left. And it's like, how have you, what do you mean you had four left? It's like, look, you don't know how hard you can push past your own boundaries. You just need to be willing to do it within the confines of obviously like safe environment, proper exercise management and all the rest of it. But I think that we've infantilized, I think, the psychological understanding of what stress is. Because when you think about like babies, for example, every single day, they have new stimulus. Every single day, positive, negative, middling. That must be for the nervous system incredibly stressful. But they don't get to just take a day off from work and hide under the duvet. They have to constantly deal with it, progress forward. And granted, there is a huge aspect of this where, you know, babies don't have the same level of like consciousness or processing that we do as adults, but they still have to be able to, despite having a limited mechanism for understanding stress, continue to go through that adaptive process day in, day out. Now, I don't know about you, but I take pride in the fact that I think that I'm stronger than a baby. So why are we saying to people, oh, no, except for those Chinese babies, all those Korean babies, there's some strong ass Koreans out there. Like, I'm not afraid of the Russians anymore. Like watching the like Korean weightlifting team, that terrifies me. They are strong as shit. But I think one of the big things is that we have infantilized our concept of what stress is. And I think especially in a physiological sense, where we look at training and we always go back to that old adage of it never gets easier, you just get stronger. And life is kind of the same way. Life doesn't get any easier. You know, you get to retirement age and you're trading one set of stresses for another. Life doesn't get progressively easier.
All of a sudden you retire and now you got to look after the grandkids.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But the stress doesn't change by kind. So change by degree. It just changes by degree. So I think one of the big things to sort of really, really dive down on with this topic is if you're speaking to a client then, Greg, and you're dealing with someone who is really struggling to find progression in training, and obviously working on the principle that you've had the conversation about nutrition, you've had the conversation about hydration, training frequency, rest, recovery, sleep, all that jazz, but they're finding it mentally hard to try and push through those heavier weights, to push through on getting more reps, to push out of their comfort zone, to build not just physiological, but also psychological robustness. What are the kind of techniques and or advice that you typically would give that client? Other than grow up.
But a lot of the time it is that advice for people. It's client dependent, obviously. Some of them you put an arm around, and some of them you tell just to fucking shut up and do it. It's depending on their personality. But a lot of the time there is some trickery afoot, always. That's how I generally work people up to it. Call them top sets. So I'll be like, right, we're going to work up slowly in weight to a top set. How many reps should I do? As many as you can. I won't give repetition. And then we literally go, but normally it needs you there for them to go to legitimate failure. And they always have a rep scheme in their head that they're trying to hit where it's like 10, 12, and they figure out they can do 18, 19, 20, sometimes 30 repetitions with that weight. And then you try and explain that adaptation does not happen in comfort. And that's in day-to-day life and that's in training. Adaptation will never occur unless you push past limits that you think you're capable of. And you can go to the extreme things where you always look at like Tom Platz and people like that who go till they are screaming. That's the extreme end of it, of course. But people need to learn and understand and adapt. Not necessarily the words adapt is not what I'm looking for right now. People need to learn and understand and feel what it is like for true discomfort under a hack squat or under a leg press, to understand what they're capable of and what is needed for them to get the results they're looking for. It's like when people come in and they say, I want to be in the fucking best shape of my life in 12 weeks. It's like, buckle fucking up. Like, there's so much work that we have to do here. This is not going to be fun. But nothing good really comes from comfort. And I've discussed that before. But nothing progressive in life comes from comfort, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. And I think a big part of that, as you said, is looking at the client and sort of judging how you can and cannot speak to them. Because as you say, some people do need the shoulder to cry on. Other people just need to be told to grow the fuck up. But I think one of the big things is sort of like, I try and challenge their sort of like their logical fallacies when it comes to stuff like this. So especially when it comes to diet, right? Because I know that like in terms of nutrition, one of the most resistant points of topic is always either protein or vegetables, usually both, but or vegetables. Because you get people who just go, oh, I don't really like vegetables. It's like, cool. Does a five-year-old get away with not getting to eat vegetables? No? Okay. Do you think you're better than a five-year-old? Oh, but I struggle to have a bedtime routine. It's okay. Okay, cool. A child has a bedtime routine. It's forced to do it. You are now being forced to do this. There needs to be a certain level of of accountability, but also accepting that this isn't going to be a period of enjoyment. This is type 2 fun. It is fun when it is done. And physical change is really, really difficult. A really good analogy that I heard the other day was everyone wants to talk about, you know, being, you know, the tip of the spear, right? They want to be, you know, the sharpest of sharp blades. But people forget that the process of sharpening a sword is the process of shearing off metal that is no longer needed. It's damaged, it's unnecessary, it's superfluous. The stuff that you do not need, you have to cut it away. It has to be worn away. And that takes time, it takes effort, and it takes, most importantly, friction and resistance. And meeting that friction resistance. And if people aren't prepared to do that, then I think one of the biggest ports of call they need to look at is that sort of like internal mechanism of how much do they want it. You know, I saw this great joke on Instagram the other day that meatloaf is the ultimate safe word, because it means that you'll do anything for love, but you won't do that. And it's so true when it comes to not just your boudoir activities, but also we have clients the whole time that say, I'll do anything. And then after a week, they quit.
Well, it's always that thing, like, so I'll do anything to lose weight. Will you cut your arm off to lose weight? It's like, no. Okay. Right. We found one thing you won't do. Like, it's people, I think, and I've been responsible for this at many stages in my life, people massively underestimate how hard it is to make a legitimate lifestyle change and make it consistent. Mm. It's really hard. Like, you are stuck in the same mentality, for my circumstance, 36 years. And then you say to yourself, right, tomorrow, I'm never going to eat pizza again. Yeah. It's like, okay, right, let's see how that goes. This consistent, excuse me. I'm the only person who goes to Spain and gets a cold. it's just, the loogie's just going down. Hold on.
Excellent, excellent. That's that. We've now alienated and lost the majority of our listeners. Lovely.
So like, making consistent lifestyle change is extremely hard. And it's like you said, is massive resistance internally. People talk about neural pruning. It's fascinating when they look at neurochemistry, but they look at it in addicts, right? So it's a bit different. But like, you can create these pathways that are just more efficient every time it gives you pleasure. So like, if getting ice cream every night is something that gives you pleasure, it's something that your brain actually prunes the neurons to make it more direct. So like, breaking that habit requires continuous effort and adaptation and replacement over time. And I think we're stuck in a society, and I'm responsible for it as well, of instant gratification, which makes these lifestyle changes really difficult.
Yeah, and I think, but the thing is, I think a big part of it is the fact that we just get in our own way. We really, really do get in our own way, because we're not willing to actively address a lot of the deep-seated issues. And I think Lane Norton made a really good point about this, where he said that we don't have a weight loss problem, we have a weight maintenance problem. because everyone knows how to artificially create environments that lead to ultimate weight loss, but they don't know how to create the habitual changes in their thought processes and also the internal subconscious drivers they have towards the negative behaviors they have. And they're not willing to deal with them. And sometimes that literally, you know, goes the whole degree from they need to have a coach to keep them accountable to they need to go to fucking therapy. And people aren't willing to do those things. And I completely appreciate that there is a financial element to that in terms of like some people can't afford a coach, some people can't afford therapy. And one is definitely more expensive than the other, as we both well know. But one of the key things there is the fact that there is so much out there. There are so many resources out there that will point you in the right direction, but you've got to be willing to go searching for them. If you know you've got a messed up relationship with food, go search. Get into that discomfort, address the things that are psychologically preventing you from delving into the actual process of creating change, because that in and of itself is going to create stress, yes, but it's going to create adaptive stress. And it's the only way that we're ever going to build up a level of psychological and or physiological and neurochemical stress resilience.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I mean, it's, I know we always talked about it before, like the gym is therapy when really it's not. But yeah. There's two different, I'd say, like creating physical resiliency and creating mental resiliency are two different things. But in terms of change, like it's why I, like, don't get me wrong, I love people who come in and they say, I want to do a 12-week transformation, because I know, like, I'll get photos at the end of it. I can market that. But realistically, when people come in for 12 weeks, you're like, how quick do you think they're going to, like, so if someone comes into you for 12 weeks, drops 12%, 15% body fat, how quick are they putting that back on if they just walk away?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's
the same amount of time that they used to lot that they had to lose it. And I've seen it, like we used to see it in SOS, people just rotating through the door. And we used to say, like, and don't get me wrong, we had these conversations with them every time they came back. It's like, this time we need to do this consistently, and we need to do it where we're creating habit. No, I just gotta lose the weight now first, then I'll do that. It's like, you've done that five times.
And this is the thing, it is the literal putting the cart before the horse. You know what I mean? Like, you're doing everything back asswards. You just need to focus on actually, like, right, how do we start instilling these habitual changes? I mean, I'm working with a client at the moment who is, you know, incredibly not resistant to change. But what I'm saying, because it's so simple and we're focusing on the basics, challenges so much of all the stuff that she's read and she's delved into and all the neuro and biochemical stuff. And basically, she's got paralysis by analysis due to the fact that she knows too much. So a big part of it is just saying, like, look, you have all this information, but you're not putting it into practicality. You're doing 3,001 things rather than just focusing on the one thing. And that in and of itself leads to a huge amount of stress, because you think by this point, I have the knowledge. I have seen the Buddha. I have enlightenment, but you can't do it. You can't put it into practice.
Because there's too many lifestyle changes at once. And I know we're, like, talking about stress, but this kind of does lead back around into it, because our ability to be able to create change are the things that will make us be more resilient to stress. So whether that's like a sleep routine is one of those ones, like you speak to someone, and even like you look at like the job role I'm doing now. So like high functioning people that will do all the training, all the nutrition, will do everything, we'll take all the supplements, and you're like, you need 15 minutes at night to meditate, you need 15 minutes at night to sit in a warm bath, whatever it is, and they're like, what supplement can I take? And you're like, none, brother. Like, you're doing it all, you've got a list of 30 supplements, like, you're fine. But it's creating like that one, like you said, there's just resistance to that one thing. And maybe that's because they're so high functioning that there's always something going on in their head, so when they actually sit and have to meditate or whatever it is, that's something they don't want to expose themselves to. But it shows, like you said, the one thing, what's the biggest thing that's going to move the needle? And most people know what that is for them. They know whether that's getting pissed at the weekend, whether that is they need to, like simple things, like they need to front load their calories, because every time they back load their calories, they overeat. So like, oh, I don't eat all day, and then I eat fucking loads in the evening. It's like, how long have you been doing this for? 10 years. What do you think you have to do? Like, even the first time, so I need to eat early in the day. How long did you know this for? 10 years. And you're like, okay. So it's something that's been sitting there that you know, but yet you've been consistently trying to do it the opposite way. And creating that habitual change, like I said, a coach can be helpful and accountability can be helpful. Like we even do it with our coaches where we have accountable coaches every week, and it's not for training, because most of us are consistent in terms of our training. It's something we've done for a long time. But like, what habit do you want to change? Okay, here's someone who's going to message you every night and ask if you've done it. And having, what's that called? Having the fear of someone overlooking you actually makes you create that change or take that action. I can't remember what it's called, but it is coined and it does help. So having someone that you're accountable to can be really important, whether that's a coach, a wife, whoever it is, to make change, having someone to be accountable is really important.
Yeah. And I think, you know, a perfect point to close out on, considering I already made that weird Buddhist tangent earlier, is that ultimately enlightenment is not taught, it is realized. And that only happens when you actually delve internally and realize the mechanisms that are preventing you from actually progressing forward into your best, most enlightened self. And ultimately, if you, anyone, as you said, is truly honest with themselves, they know exactly what the source of their own bullshit is. They're just not willing to deal with it. And that really is a secret source for success.
What's yours?
What's mine?
Yeah.
Oh, I am way too up in my feelings about everything. Like my emotions, I used to be someone who prided myself on being really, really in control of my emotions, but that was just a proxy for I was repressing all of my emotions.
Ah.
It's like, oh, I'm just so in control. It's like, no, you're compartmentalizing in a very unhealthy way. And yeah, now I'm like, and now
once then you have a breakdown and a cry.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So now it's just, well, it's a case of like, you know, I didn't cry for years. Now I just cry all the time. Now it's just a case of I don't set boundaries properly. I let my feelings take control of myself and my life way too easily, way, way, way too easily. And I'm very, very good at telling myself that tomorrow.
Oh yeah, that's a good one. That's
tomorrow.
A good one.
Tomorrow, because I'm like, okay, I just need to feel my feelings and then I'll be back to normal tomorrow. And it's not tomorrow. And you know, like, I don't think that the answer is, you know, that, you know, there's that Instagram reel that goes around, which just goes like, do it angry, do it sad, do it happy, do it whatever, just fucking do it. I'm like, okay, cool, yeah, I really appreciate the sentiment, but that's also the other end of the spectrum, right? That's also super unhealthy. But there has to be that element of, you know, right, is this a reason or is this an excuse?
Mm.
And like, that's the thing. Like, you know, classic example, I always say one of the first rules of nutrition is don't be socially weird. Like, I remember seeing this dude come into a cinema once and he was absolutely like, he must have like been prepping for a show. He was like cheekbones up to his fucking eyeballs, just like, just completely shredded down to his socks. Bought out Tupperware in the middle of the cinema. I was like, brother, you are weird. Don't be weird, right? If I'm going to the, if, yeah, like, yeah, if I'm going to a cinema, right, and it happens to fall in with a meal time, then I'll just hold it back. It's fine. I'll just wait till I get home, or I'll eat something before I go. Absolutely fine. Don't need to be weird. But on the opposite end of the spectrum, there's the, oh yeah, you know, I guess I can fit this entire bag of crisps into my macros. And, you know, I'm usually so good, so it's not going to matter. It's like, one's a reason, set and setting. The other one's just an excuse filled with your own bullshit.
Yeah. That's interesting. Like, I'm very much a result of, like, I'll do it tomorrow. And, yeah. Like, I will set a list. And it's a bizarre thing. And it's, you'll set a list of 10 things, right? These are the things I have to do today. I will always do 8 or 9. And there's the one or two things, and it's not always the same thing. I just go, I've done enough. It's like, no, you set targets. Like, you will be so much more satisfied if you spent an extra 15 minutes and finish those two tasks. But I don't. I go, that's enough for today. You've done well, Greg. Yeah, no, that's interesting. Is it an excuse or is it a reason? I'll have to think about that in future.
Yeah, that's my big anchor point at the moment. Like, it's gotten to the point where I'm going to see if I can like get it tatted under my eyeballs just so I can see it the whole time. So I can have a blink and just think, oh God, I need to challenge my own bullshit. Speaking of which, I've got an appointment I need to get to. I know you're an incredibly busy man. So let's close out this show. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. And remember, you can find Greg and I on all of the socials. Please do hit us up with any topics or questions that you want discussed. And this has been Talking Fit. Welcome back, and thank you very much for listening.